Chapter 6. Time on the Ring Island seemed suspended. Something in the silvery fluid, in the splash from the restoring liquids, in the aura of disturbed peace that had surrounded the didact, had deeply affected me. I felt I had been bathed in history, waded through time itself. Suns rose and set, but I was not sure they were the same sun, nor that the night sky was the same sky. Everything seemed different. The two humans stayed close, like worried pets. We dozed together. Their touch was no longer repugnant. They helped keep me warm. Given time, I would never understand humans, but I might feel a certain affection for them. I actually slept for the first time since infancy, confirming to myself that it was armor that relieved Forerunners from this natural act. After 10 days, the didact ventured out of the chamber to take exercise. His skin had lost most of its wrinkled character and taken on a more natural grayish-pink color. He still wore no armor, perhaps because he was intent on full recovery without assistance. Silent, morose, he did not ask for company, and we avoided his pathways. Still, I made note of the changes his return from eternity had brought to this place. All the war sphinxes were now active. They moved purposefully about the island, blazing fresh trails through the trees, though they always left the green leafy canopies intact. I assumed they were establishing points of observation and lines of communication between possible defensive positions. Such preparations seemed antique and peculiar, to say the least. Perhaps the didact had not returned with his wits intact. Once we observed two sphinxes merging to create a larger unit, yet with the same stern, judgmental expression carved into the forward surface. From near the ramp, where Shakas and I lunched on fruit and coconuts, we watched the didact return from a hike that had begun with movement east and now ended with his return from the west, a complete circuit of the island, following the new trails.
"What's he doing?" Shakas asked, his mouth full.
"Reconnoitering. Preparing for his defense," I guessed.
"Defense against what?" Shakas asked, incredulous.
I wondered if these humans knew how lucky they were, that he hadn't already crushed them with his great hands, or had the sphinxes burned them to ashes. The didact descended the ramp, paying as little attention to us as he might a windblown shrub or a wayward scatter of birds.
"Why are we here?" Shakas asked me, his voice hushed. "What is he to the librarian?"
"Her husband," I said. "In the old legends, they were married." Shakas looked shocked, then disgusted.
"Forerunners marry each other?"
To be honest, I was equally incredulous. How could such an intimate alliance form between the supreme enemy of humans and their last and greatest protector? I explained simply to pass the time.
"Forerunners marry for many reasons, but the lower rates are said to marry more often for love. This allows strange liaisons. Humans will never understand. Your own customs are much too primitive."
Shakas received this with less than perfect grace. He swore under his breath and took off through the jungle. I thought him remarkably obtuse, unwilling as he was to accept his station in life. Riser was constantly venturing into the jungle alone and brought back more fruits and a few coconuts. He seemed unconcerned about what might happen next. The didact stayed in the chamber that evening while I hiked through the jungle with my humans. Ownership seemed a more seemly relation than brotherhood. We then gathered on the inner beach under a brilliance of stars. My apprehension and numbness had dissipated and were now, too typically I fear, being replaced by boredom. We had served our purpose. We weren't needed anymore, obviously. If we weren't to be killed or arrested, if the didact ignored us,
that perhaps we could make our way to the outer shore and find a boat. But Shakas didn't think so. He pointed out that the profile of the crater's central peak had changed.
They'll see it from the rim. That will stop any boats from coming here.
I hadn't deigned to be so observant. Generally, personal armor kept track of life's little details, leaving forerunners free to engage in elevated thoughts. What's changed? I asked, irritated. It's dark. It still has trees around its base and bare rocks up to the top.
I think the machines are crossing over and working there, he said. Anyway, something is moving rocks.
Sphinxes are war machines, not excavators.
Maybe there are other machines.
We don't see them, I pointed out, and I don't hear anything. Tomorrow, Riser suggested, and vanished into the trees, not to return for hours. Shakas and I made our way to the outer shore. The next night, we tried to follow Riser on one of his excursions. The little human was apparently allowed to roam freely, but a solitary war sphinx dropped swiftly through the trees and planted itself on curved legs, blocking Shakas and me.
What are we, prisoners? I shouted.
It made no answer. Shakas shook his head, grinning.
What's funny? I asked, as we trudged back the way we had come, followed by the hovering sphinx.
Riser darted past us with a small pile of nuts.
Shakas shouted after him, not in anger, but in humor. Hamanush are free to come and go, he said. He'll boast about it if we get home. Looks like he's our superior here.
His brain is smaller than yours, I said.
And yours is smaller than the Didax, I'll wager.
No, I said, and was about to explain the ways of mutation from manipular to higher rates and greater forms while we returned to the clearing around the half-buried chamber. But my words were choked off. The Didax sat in a posture of quiet thought atop the left wall of the ramp. His dark hooded eyes tracked us for the first time as if we were worthy of some small attention. He grunted and dropped from the wall with newfound agility.
Manipular, he said. Why are these humans here?
Shakas and I stood before the Promethean, locked into awed silence. This was it, I thought. The time of judgment and punishment.
Tell me, why humans?
This is our world,
Shakas said, in a fair imitation of the Didax exalted grammar and tone.
Perhaps we should ask why you are here.
I wanted to clamp my hands around his mouth and turn to reprimand him, but the Didax raised one powerful arm.
You,
he said, pointing to me.
How came this to be?
The human is telling the truth, I said. This is a planet reserved for their occupation. I came here seeking artifacts. These humans showed me to your resting place. They have
A cryptum is not to be violated,
he interrupted, looking off at the sky.
One of you found a way to open my vessel. Who and how?
His sadness was like a pall over the beach and the jungle. For me, in the presence of such a senior forerunner, it seemed as if the very air filled with his weary gloom. The humans sang songs, I answered. The cryptum opened.
Only one forerunner would ever be so devious,
the Didact said, his voice softening.
Or so clever. You were about to say, the humans have a Gaius. Someone infused them with codes in their infancy, or earlier, genetically.
I think that might be so.
How much time has passed?
Perhaps 1,000 years, I said. A very long sleep.
Not sleep,
the Didact said.
I entered the cryptum on another world. Someone brought me here. Why?
We're tools of the librarian, Shaka said. We serve her.
The didact examined the human with distaste.
With my sphinxes, someone helped revive me.
I did, I confirmed.
I had hoped to rise in triumph and recognition of my judgment. But instead, I found myself facing young fools and the offspring of ancient enemies. This is worse than disgrace. Only one other reason, one other provocation, would make the librarian revive me under these humiliating circumstances.
He raised one arm, then executed a brief wave in the air with his fingers. The pieces of armor floated out of the chamber, and the didact assumed a position of robing, arms extended. The armor section surrounded his limbs, his torso, and finally the top of his head in shimmering pale bands that floated centimeters above his skin. I was surprised by the humbleness of the armor's design. My father's armor was far more ornate, yet he was not the stuff of legend. Such were the sumptuary rules of Forerunners. Even a great Promethean must dress below the style of any builder.
There must be a reason my wife is not here to greet me,
the didact said when he was fully clothed. He stretched his arms to the stars. Beams shot from his fingers, and he sketched out several constellations, as if commanding the stars to move. I felt strangely surprised when they did not. The beams dimmed and went out, and he curled his fingers into fists.
You know nothing.
So I've been told, I said.
You are a mere manipular, and a reckless one at that.
He pointed to Riser.
Little human, I know your kind. You are of an ancient form. I asked you be preserved because you are peaceful yet full of cleverness, worthy pets to amuse and by low example to instruct our young, but you.
He swung his finger around to shock us.
You are too much like the humans who nearly wrecked my fleets and murdered my warriors. My wife has taken liberties. She provokes me.
He stretched out his arms. The armor flashed.
You provoke me.
Shaka's face clouded, but wisely, he said nothing. The didact seemed to rethink any violent action. His arms dropped, and the armor returned to a state of protection.
Manipular, where did you see first light?
He asked. I explained that my venerable builder family had long inhabited systems in and around the Orion Nebular Complex, near the Forerunner core.
Why are you naked?
Merces surround this island, I said. They won't tolerate complex machines. My ancilla...
My wife raised merces in our garden shallows,
the didact said.
Never liked them much myself. Show me.